This is a Main Hustle Media podcast.
All the way from the A, you listen to my favorite lesbian on BRQ.
Hey, stay locked in with your favorite lesbian on Black Radical Queer. Yeah.
Hey y'all, this is Javia Nicole, aka your favorite lesbian, and you're listening to Black Radical Queer Podcast, our stories on our own terms. Hey y'all, this is Javia Nicole. Welcome back to Black Radical Queer Podcast. So, first of all, I want to give a disclaimer. I was at a conference this past weekend, and I had to teach, and I just had a lot of stuff going on, and I recognize that my voice is suffering as a result. So I apologize in advance for that. I honestly have attempted to start recording this podcast like 3 or 4 times, but I've been going through the struggle. Okay. So I apologize in advance for that. Secondly, before I get into my episode, I do want to go ahead and shamelessly plug my Patreon. I have noticed that since I have been mentioning it, I have gotten some new patrons. So shout out to y'all. I would like to shout you out and name you, but I don't want to do so without your consent. So I'll check in with them. And if y'all are, you know, cool with me actually naming you and, you know, giving you an official shout out on the show, then I'll do that. So I'll find out before the next episode. All right. So yeah, support the Patreon. It's patreon.com. So that's patreon.com/BlackRadQueer, BLKRADQWR. So I'm Black Rad Queer on everything. If you want to, let's say, donate via Venmo or Cash App, it's Black Rad Queer, BLKRADQWR, on Venmo, Cash App, Patreon, all over these internets. That's what it is. So there are different levels where you can support from, you know, and each level has like its own name and stuff like that. So, but if you want to do a one-time contribution, that's also possible through the Venmo and Cash App. Thank you for your support. I definitely appreciate it. And it does absolutely help. So far with the patrons that I have, it can at least help me cover some of the costs of the hosting fees for the show. So, yeah. All right. So anyway, for this episode, this is one of those ones where I just really want to do kind of like a social. Y'all, every time I try to say social, I would say like social. But anyway, social media roundup / news roundup, just things that have caught my eye or things that are going on. Ever since, you know, I had a listener, I'm pretty sure it was Serene, who asked about, you know, me like talking about more current events and just news and stuff like that. I've been trying to do that regularly. And according to the numbers, the response has been really good. So that's something I'm trying to make sure that I continue doing. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about actually is regarding trans women. But like, I know I often mention, you know, like trans women are targeted and being, you know, decimated. And so, you know, I mention it a lot, and I'm like, you know, we have to be more protective and caring and empathetic and all types of things toward our Black trans sisters. And so that's something that I've mentioned periodically or fairly regularly, not like every single episode, but on a lot of them, because it's continuously a pressing issue. And I feel like every time I go to do a new episode, there's another Black trans woman who has been murdered. So it is always timely. It is always relevant until that is no longer the case. But today, what I want to focus on actually has to deal with workplace discrimination. So of course, there are like 3 workplace discrimination cases that are that went before the Supreme Court. That was on October 8th. And involving basically, are there protections for based on sexual orientation and gender identity? And so one of the things that is relevant to that is that trans women face a lot of workplace discrimination. And of course, there's all kinds of workplace discrimination that happens. But if you are a trans woman, let's say you're a Black trans woman, then You have, you know, the discrimination that comes along with being Black, as well as the discrimination that comes along with being trans. And with workplace discrimination, I mean, that is absolutely directly impacting your livelihood and your ability to survive. It's just a huge issue. And so it's relevant now and timely now just because of these cases going before the Supreme Court. So to give a little bit of background on these, on just this issue. So right now, at last time that I checked, which was like this weekend when I was creating the outline for the episode, last time I checked, there were only 20 states, well, 21 if you including DC, so 20 states and DC that have laws that explicitly, like deliberately state that, you know, workplace discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity is banned. So that's just the state. Those are state laws, though, that like spell it out, that explicitly say, you know, you cannot discriminate on someone based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. Now, I live in Los Angeles. I live in California. So I know that we're one of those states. And so like in my, like, you know, when I read through all of my information for work and stuff like that, it does explicitly say, you know, you cannot be discriminated against based on your sexual orientation, your gender identity, those types of things. Right. But those are just in less than half of the states in the U.S. that actually spells that out. Now, federal law does not explicitly say that. So federal law, you know, we have Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 that talks about, you know, the prohibition of discrimination in the workplace based on like sex, race, you know, it has like all those categories, all those protected categories, but sexual orientation and gender identity are not federally protected. And the only thing that is kind of like somewhat relevant to either of those is the category of sex. And so what they're trying to figure out now is, does this category of sex, is that inclusive of gender identity and sexual orientation? Like, does that particular protection also encompass discrimination based on, you know, your orientation or your gender identity? So that is what is currently being, you know, basically gone over in the Supreme Court with three cases. Okay. So it was on the 8th where they started hearing like the arguments and all that type of stuff. So, but we don't, it's not expected to like be an actual decision until sometime next year, like next spring or even summer. So there's still, you know, a long time before we actually know how this is going to turn out, but it has a huge impact on the future of rights for queer people, for trans people, for gender nonconforming people, for anybody who falls under that umbrella. The implications are, you know, the stakes are high because this is our livelihood that could be at stake. Now, you know, I have the privilege of being in a place where at least there's the state protection. So I can't be, you know, fired from my job for my queerness. However, if I was in a state where that was not the case, then that would be a very real fear because I'm not closeted. And even for people who are closeted, there's always that fear or that threat potentially of being outed. And, you know, there's differences when it comes to, of course, sexual orientation and gender identity. And one may be more kind of easier to mask than the other, or there's just like a lot of factors, right, that we have to consider. So that's what's happening right now. And I think that the reason I brought up like Black trans women and why that stood out to me is because, of course, they're at the intersection of the gender identity and race. So they already have these things that are compounded. And then if you have, if you're, you know, let's say a Black trans woman and you're queer, like, and you are lesbian or whatever, not straight, then that just adds another element to it. So, if it's something that you're not aware of, then it would be a good idea to just do a little bit of research and find out more about, what's going on in that, with that. Because I mean, it's, even though we won't have a ruling until next year, that's right around the corner. And you know, yeah, we just don't know how that's going to turn out. And it could just really have some dire implications. And queer folks are already dealing with, you know, workplace discrimination, already having their livelihood threatened. So if they don't have those protections, then they don't really have any recourse. If we don't have those protections, we don't have any recourse for fighting back against it or anything like that. It just really opens up a huge problem. So do a little bit of research, and yeah, just be informed and kind of see, you know, if there are any actions taking place in your area. I saw different areas that, where they were having rallies, and some people gathered outside of the Supreme Court on the 8th. So, you know, there's different stuff that's going on, but yeah, just try to stay abreast of that. All right. Now, speaking of the workplace, now this is a completely different issue, but it, for me, is related to the workplace. So, so in my workplace, I work with almost all people of color, right? Now, not all Black people, you know, I very deliberately said all people of color. So there is this administrator in my office who is Asian, I think like Asian Pacific Islander is what she has going on. So something I noticed about her is that sometimes she speaks in what I feel like is a Black scent. Okay. And it bothers me. And I was kind of like side-eyeing her because I was trying to figure out, like, is this just how she talks, or is she like putting on a Black scent? And if so, why? Like, is this like her sassy voice, you know? And so I'm looking at her like, bitch, you know? So I'd be side-eyeing her, y'all. Like, I still side-eye her because I'm not for certain. And because like she could have just, it could, you know, be her putting on Black scent, and she's been doing it so long that she's just used to doing it. I don't know a whole lot about her background and stuff like that, but I'll just say that it definitely makes me side eye her. I don't like it. It bothers me. Right. So that seems a little random, but I thought about it because I saw this article, pop up that was talking about, Lily Singh. I think her last name is pronounced Singh. So Lily Singh, she has a late night show, and Lily Singh is Asian. Yeah, so she has a late night show or whatever, and she's also bisexual. And so a lot of folks are talking about, oh, you know, this is great for representation and, you know, a bisexual woman of color and, you know, all this type of stuff. And so I've had people mention it to me, you know, since I have this podcast, they're like, hey, you know, have you heard about this? Like, what do you think? You know, this is more representation. But that's all well and fine. But like, you know, there's a lot of, problematic things with non-Black people of color and some of the things that they do. So, and she, Lily, is one of those people who have kind of like built her image and like built her fame and her success. A lot of it is built on, appropriating Black culture, utilizing Black, like, caricatures and stereotypes and stuff like that to be quote unquote funny, really copying, Black culture, mocking that type of stuff. And so she puts like, that puts me in the mind of people like Awkwafina. I got issues with Awkwafina. I don't like it. I cringe. Anytime I hear Awkwafina speak, open her mouth, anytime I see her on the screen, I cringe because, they're just prime examples of like, wearing Blackness as like a costume. It's this performative bullshit that I really don't like. I mean, it's just a hot mess. So yeah, just, you know, things like how they wear their hair and using the Black scent and the clothes they're wearing and all that, and being like it comes across like this is the person you get when you want to have that sidekick or that addition who brings some of the elements of Black culture without the actual Blackness. So really to me, it's just like a mockery of Black culture, and it really fucking bothers me. All right. So, it's just a problem to me. So, and then too, it's like, they're able to get away with this for a long time. Like, they're able to get away with, performative blackness, you know, basically like performing blackface, and without consequences, because they're still able to have these successful careers. So for me, as a queer woman of color, a queer black woman, I cannot celebrate the success of this other person who's a queer woman of color, just because we have that in common, because I'm like, nah, like I see how you do with my culture. And so I can't rock with that. I can't. So I don't, you know, feel positive things towards you. So that's where I am with like Lily Singh and with Awkwafina. Even the name Awkwafina and how it's spelled, you know, like her name is fucking Nora. Awkwafina's name is like Nora Lum or Loom. So I'm like, where the fuck did this name Awkwafina come from and spelled the way it's spelled? And, you know, I just got issues. So she's like ratchet adjacent. So it's really another example, like when they show white models like on the runway wearing fucking do-rags. It's the same thing. It's like, okay, you want these elements of black culture without the actual blackness. And I just have issues with that personally. So yeah. So I say all that to say, just thinking about the workplace and this administrator in my office, it just really bothers me. And when she talks, I think about like Awkwafina and Lily Singh and stuff like that. And it's honestly, it's a situation where I haven't quite figured out how I want to navigate it, because this person is not my boss. She's not my boss or anything, but she is someone that I have to occasionally work with. And anytime I'm around her, I just feel myself like start to preemptively cringe, because I'm like, I know she gonna, you know, start talking like, I don't know. Y'all, it just bothers me. So yeah. But it's just indicative of, you know, a larger issue that we've been seeing forever of how people perform. It really is like performative blackface. Even if you're not literally painting your face black, it's the same. You're putting on the culture, to perform. So it's still a fucking problem. So yeah. And then two, it's like, you know, we get criticized for, like, for instance, for code switching. You know, we can code switch and we can speak in our professional voice and enunciate and pronounce all of our words, you know, completely. Or we can just talk regular and be like, you know, if I'm from the South, so if I talk without doing all that, then this is how I sound. And sometimes my words are going to be cut off at the end. And sometimes I'm going to say y'all and gonna and, you know, just I'm going to talk how I talk. And we get criticized and, you know, that's not proper English and blah, blah, blah. But you get these other people who are code switching, but they're code switching to a code that ain't their code. And so that's the issue I have with this administrator in my office. And that's the same issue I have with these other folks. I'm like, you're code switching, but you ain't code switching to a language that's yours to code switch to. Like, I can learn Spanish, but that don't mean I can code switch in Spanish. You know, that's a different type of situation. So it's like, why aren't you, you know, you're not code switching in and out of, you know, whatever your, let's say, like, you know, if I don't know what, I mean, I don't know if I'm for Lily Singh, if English is her first language or like what her family, but let's say if it's like Cantonese or something. Okay, then I don't hear you using that in the same way that you use like AAVE and go in and out and stuff like that. It's just a problem. So yeah. And then people just give them a pass. And I don't really understand why. It's, you know, it just really fucking bothers me. And so I think about this administrator in the workplace and I'm just like, I don't want her to have a pass. I don't want to give her a pass for doing this. It really bothers me. Like, it really does. And I'm just kind of looking at it like, okay, what should I, how should I address this situation? Because it really bothers me. I'm like, is this really how you talk? I don't know. Y'all, I mean, y'all should see. I be side-eyeing the shit out of her. We be in a meeting. I just be like, I'll probably be having a stank face. I just be side-eyeing her. Like, I don't want to hear her talk because it really fucking bothers me. Anyway, so I know I was going on about that. But yeah, that was just something popped in my head because I was thinking about, you know, the lady in the workplace. And then it made me think of that same issue on a broader scale. So. Y'all just getting my random thoughts. yeah. All right. Something else that I wanted to talk about that I think is dope. So, So like I told you, I was at a conference this past weekend. I've mentioned before on another episode that like I'm pretty sure I mentioned this. So like I'm a dominant, I'm a leather woman. I'm a part of a service organization, and we had like a conference, and a lot of stuff that we do, like, of course, I mean, and this is for other settings too, but, you know, revolves around like when you socialize, you're drinking, and we do a lot of stuff at like bars and, you know, all that type of stuff, having parties and stuff. So there's a lot of alcohol. And then we have people, and even just yesterday, I met up with some friends and we went out to lunch, and, you know, there was a sushi place, there was sake and beer and stuff. And, but we had one person with us who is sober and who has not drank in 4 years. And then I have like, you know, people close to me who have been sober for a long time. So we go to all these things and there's just like, alcohol is kind of par for the course. Like we're just used to seeing it. And, I think it would be, I've been seeing more conversations come up about this in terms of making those types of environments more friendly, and more accommodating to sober people, having more options for sober people, and just even stuff where like they can, where so folks who are not, you know, indulging in alcohol can still go and get the social element, but without having to be surrounded by alcohol. Now I drink, I actually don't as much as I used to. Like I used to kind of like go in, and now I just kind of more so drink occasionally socially, but I don't always want to drink. Like it's just not that deep to me to drink all the time and for every social gathering. And so I absolutely think it's a great idea to be able to have more settings where, hey, we can get together and we can hang out, and have drinks essentially, but not necessarily alcoholic drinks. And also being able to do that in that kind of setting in the evening time, because like, let's say you go to like a coffee shop. Okay, cool. But you know, a juice bar, but that's not a nighttime, like the going out to the bar and the club has a certain atmosphere. And if you want that atmosphere, but just without the alcohol, there aren't really options, you know? So I've been seeing more conversations about that. And I think it's really important. I do think it would be great to have more options where they don't revolve around alcohol. So I saw this, this article about a young woman who started her own tea shop, and she wants it to be a safe space for folks who are LGBTQ and for Black folks and folks who are sober. So of course it caught my eye because I'm like, yes, you know, Black and queer, and you know, I'm here for all of that. So and it just looked dope to me. So yeah, so I'm like, her name's Ariel Clark. She had been working on her goal, like of having this tea shop, for a few years. Like she basically, you know, she expressed how like when she came out, you know, she was excited to kind of like get into the mix of socializing and like queer community and all that. And so when she turned 21, she went out to a bar. And so she's like, you know, hey, I can go to the bar now. I can go party with my people, you know, all that type of stuff. That opens up options to me. I can go into these queer spaces that I've been craving, you know, to go in. And I definitely can relate to that because some of the earliest spaces that I went into, for me, like coming out were, lesbian bars and clubs and stuff like that. So I definitely understand where she's coming from. But she said that it was uncomfortable for her because she came from a household where they didn't drink. So she wasn't accustomed to being surrounded by, you know, being in an environment where it's charged by alcohol and surrounded by alcohol. And this is not like her exact words. This is like me, you know, just like sharing with you based on like me reading about her. But yeah, but she said she came from, you know, a home where they didn't drink. And so she was uncomfortable. Like she wanted to be able to enjoy herself and have a good time with her friends and stuff, but she was uncomfortable because of just being around a lot of alcohol. And so, and she just wasn't interested in drinking. So she was like, you know, she wanted to be able to enjoy that party culture and that queer like social culture without it being in conjunction with drinking. And so she didn't know what to do because she's like, those things a lot of times go hand in hand. And that's absolutely true. So, she was like, you know, I want to be able to have this kind of space without the alcohol. So when she was in school, in college, she was, you know, just kind of fleshing out this idea, like, what am I going to do? And she eventually developed her own tea shop called Sis Got Tea. And I just think that that's pretty dope. So she started like a Kickstarter so that she could get funding to, like, you know, get her business off the ground. She has raised a lot of, well, I know last time I checked, she had raised, her goal was like $6,000. And the last time I looked, she was pretty close to her goal. So by now she may have surpassed it, but I'm hoping that she's able to get everything she needs to really get this, to get Sis Got Tea off the ground. Cause I think it's a great idea. And, she's in what I want to say Louisville. Yeah, she's in Louisville. So, yeah, I just think it would be dope. I mean, if she's able to get it off the ground, which I hope, you know, the community rallies around her, check, look up Sis Got Tea. You know, her name is Ariel Clark. So you can, you know, look her up and see, you know, if you want to support. But I would love to go, even if I got to take a trip, I would love to go check it out and just support her, because I think that's a really dope idea. So yeah, we do need more sober spaces. I just think that's awesome. So I'm hoping that she's successful. And, you know, it's time, like, I think it's time too to kind of like be able to shift away from relying on alcohol or any substances to like facilitate having a good time and being able to just enjoy each other's company and all that. And you can be just as creative with tea and with other drinks as you can with alcohol. So I really do think that it's a great idea. One of the things that stood out to me that she said, and I read like this interview with her, and she was saying that, you know, she feels like alcohol is used a lot by queer people because we've gone through so much trauma in terms of our identity and like having to come out and, you know, being like facing a lot of rejection. And so we turn to that party, you know, culture to be able to get those connections that we need. And I mean, like ballroom culture and house culture are examples of that, to where we seek out what it is that we need. But the fact that alcohol often just goes hand in hand with that, we end up seeing a lot of alcohol abuse and stuff like that. So she, that was kind of her thought process and why she wants a space where that is not a part of it. Alcohol doesn't have to be a part of it. So I definitely think that's dope. And the other thing that she mentioned, like the other reason, not just, you know, oh, you know, the drinking, but also because like with bars and stuff, if you're under 21, then you can't get in. And so she was talking about when she was younger, like when she was 16 and she was really craving that community, being able to go to like a social type of space and all that type of stuff with other LGBTQ folks, that she was really desiring that and lacking that. And so if this is a place that doesn't have alcohol, then folks who are under 18, you know, youth, LGBTQ youth can also be in the space, you know, as they're kind of coming into their identity and learning more about themselves. I think too, because a lot of times as queer folks, we don't get to see a lot of elders and like share space with a lot of elders. Queerness is a lot of times portrayed as like this young thing. You see, when we're portrayed in media, we don't get to see a lot of like older queer couples and older like queer friend groups and stuff like that. So I think that the space that she's wanting to cultivate could really be an arena for that, where someone who is younger can come into this space and see maybe an older queer couple having tea, you know, and be able to have conversation with them and be able to get guidance, or just, like I talk about possibility models, shout out Janet Mock. Being able to see a model of possibility for a future. So many queer folks die young. And so if you're able to go into a space where you can see, literally see, you know, queer folks who are older and who are in these relationships and who are socializing with each other, I think that could be really profound. I mean, I can't imagine what that would have been like for me when I came out, if I had been able to witness that. I think that that would be extraordinary. So I really hope that, she is able to be successful with that. So, I mean, she registered the business, she's raising the money. So, you know, she's trying to get it off the ground. She doesn't have a location yet, but, she's, you know, still looking for a location. She wants one that is handicap accessible. So I'm just here for what Ariel is trying to do. Yeah, because I feel like it will break down a lot of barriers. If it's handicap accessible, then that's another level of accessibility. If you don't have alcohol, that's also another level of accessibility in terms of age, accessibility for folks who are in recovery and don't need to be around a lot of alcohol and stuff like that. So I just think it's dope. So look her up, Ariel Clark, Sis Got Tea. See what's going on with that and support. And I want to see more spaces popping up like that. And it's something I've also been thinking about, just like in my own kind of movement work. What things can I do to be more inclusive? And because it's something that, you know, we all have our stuff that we have to be more mindful of. And it is like when I went to lunch yesterday, they gave us a free like thing of sake. And I had to remember, like, the person next to me doesn't drink. And it was like a reflex to be like, oh, you know, you want, and then I was like, oh, you know, I had to apologize. Like, you know, I apologize. I forgot, you know, in that moment, but because it's so such a reflex to be like, you know, pour a drink or pass a drink or whatever. So, just the type of stuff, that's something that I'm wanting to, get out of the habit of, and not, I don't want that to be an autopilot thing. And so just being able to be in spaces where we can have a good time and not, you know, have to be drunk to do it or be drinking to do it. So we're going to see if, I'm going to just try to check and see. Cause like before when I did my outline for this episode, what I shared with you all was the last updates that I had on Sis Got Tea. So I'm just going to keep kind of checking to see if there are any new updates. And if I find anything, then I'll just let y'all know. If I find out about other spaces, other people who are doing similar things, I'll, you know, mention it on the show, because I do think it really is a great thing to do. All right. I know I'm just like rambling, but those are the things that have like been on my mind that had caught my eye at this point in time. So I wanted to share those with you all. Oh, one last thing, because I was about to be like, oh, I think that was all I wanted to share. No, I almost forgot one other thing I had written down on my outline. So, y'all, this is not a new story, but it's something that I thought about because I was looking back at at the stats for previous episodes. And one of the episodes, me and my guest talked about how, you know, trans women are now not out here tricking guys and stuff like that. That's like, it's a false narrative. So that made me remember this story about this model who lied about being trans. And so I'm like, you know, okay, so let me just give y'all the background. All right. So for those of y'all who don't know, this was actually like a few months ago. So it's not a, you know, super current thing, but it just popped in my head. I was like, oh yeah, I remember that chick who lied and said she was trans. So this model, Carissa Pinkston, she modeled for Fenty. I don't know who else she modeled for. That's who I saw her in, like Fenty's campaign stuff and Savage by Fenty, but I hadn't seen her anywhere else. So anyway, you know, of course, what's done in the dark comes to light, or just past stuff comes up, and it's very common for someone's old like tweets and stuff like that, Facebook posts, to be found. And so there were some tweets that surfaced or whatever, where she said, basically that she was like, oh, being trans does not make you a woman. It just makes you trans or something like that. And, she was like, if trans women can say that they're women, then I can reclaim my virginity. So we're just like, okay, girl. So that came to the surface because she was gaining popularity as a model for Savage. And so, you know, people started following her and they start seeing tweets, because it wasn't like this was super long ago. These tweets were from this year. So all this happened this year. So it was just like a few months. The tweets were like a few months old. So it wasn't like, oh, y'all went back to when she was to like a few years ago. And no. So they were recent enough where people were seeing them, you know, as they started following her. So so she had those tweets. So then, of course, she deleted the tweets after she got, you know, a lot of smoke But people are like, you know, we already got the screenshots. So, you know, it is what it is. So she said some other stuff too, but I ain't gonna even go into all that. Yeah, but that's the gist of, you know, she was on some, you know, transphobic shit. So anyway, they came to light. So then she got fired from Elite Models, like shortly after. And then she came, I guess, quote unquote, came out on social media. After she got fired, she was like, I'm transgender. I transitioned at a very young age. So I lived my life as a female, you know, like basically from the time I was little. So she's talking about my transphobia. Talking about my transphobia is basically just like self-hate. You know, like my inner struggles, my inner insecurity that was just coming out or whatever. So this is what she said, y'all. Mind you, this is all in the span of a few months. So her initial tweets were like May of this year. She got fired in July. And then she's coming out saying that she's trans and she transitioned at an early age in July. So this is all in a very short time frame. Right. So she was like, OK, well, I'm trans. And then someone who is close to her was like, she's lying. So she came out and said this. And then there was another person, you know, on social media who was like, she ain't trans. Right. So she was like, but the model, Carissa, she was like, you know, I'm saying this now because I'm being forced to tell the truth. I'm transgender. I transitioned at a very early age. It's been very hard to keep this secret. But, you know, what I said about trans women is a direct reflection of my, I'm trying to find the direct, she said a direct reflection of like my inner insecurities, right? But somebody else was like, oh, you know, I've known her since she was small, you know, and she's lying, right? So, yeah, so a lot of folks were just like, okay, girl, you know, you're lying. So then other models started like speaking out about it. And like another trans model, an actual trans model was like, you know, imagine being a model who got exposed for being a raging transphobe. And then resorting to lying about being trans online for clout in an attempt to save your career. And so this, model was like, I know her in real life. She is cis. but yeah, she was just like, I wasn't ready to come out about it. Today I got fired. I've been receiving hate mail and death threats. So I'm being forced to tell the truth. So that's what Carissa said. And so, you know, she quote unquote came out. So then so a few days later, cause y'all, this is all, you know, short time frame. So that was July 22nd when she said she was trans. July 27th, 5 days later, she circled back, you know, and was like, well, you know, actually I panicked and this is exactly what she said. I panicked and I thought that if I came out as trans, that I could somehow make things better for myself, but it appears I've only made things worse. I'm truly sorry. I'm only 20 and I'm human. I make mistakes, but I refuse to let them define me. I apologize for any transphobic remark I've ever made towards the trans community. Okay, girl. So she's talking about, oh, so now I'm taking full responsibility for what I said, but I'm definitely not transphobic. She was like, I never came out as trans to avoid any backlash, but I did panic. And I do know what it's like to be bullied and picked on for being different. And I wanted to fit in a community. Just in that moment, I didn't know what to do. Child, I can't. She's talking about the only reason I lied. The only reason I had lied, this is what her quote says. The only reason I had lied was because of the death threats. And I was scared. So I thought they would accept me only if I said I was trans. I got an experience of what a transgender person goes through. Child. Okay, girl. So that was a hot mess. And so I just think it is so ironic that folks perpetuate this narrative that trans women are out here tricking folks when it is cis ass women who are out here talking about I'm trans. Like, girl, okay, you tried it. So that's just a hot ass mess. And It shows you the lengths that people are willing to go to cover their ass. But yeah, that's not what trans women are out here doing. So yeah, back the fuck up off my trans sisters. Okay. Cause some of these other folks out here who, you know, going through it. And I think, you know, even though, yes, she's 20, she's also 20. So 20 is not like, yeah, you're not all like super grown, but you're also not, you're still responsible. Like, you're still culpable for what you do. You're not a child technically anymore. Yeah. So just the way that that all happened was all bad. And I mean, she, you know, shot herself in the foot. I really hope that this can be a learning experience for her and she can move forward, because, you know, I do feel like people can go through stuff and can grow and do better. But, child, I hope. I can hope. All right. So anyway, I was going to be ending this episode way before now. And then I got all up into that, because if y'all don't know about it, look it up. It was, I remember it was very, you know, like it was circulating a lot, but I just thought about it because I was looking back through my stats and I was like, yeah, you know, trans women ain't out here tricking folks, you know, get it, you know, don't say that. So yeah. Anyway, I'm done with my rambling. You know how that's how it goes on these social media roundups / news roundups. Just me sharing my thoughts on shit that I see going on, circulating out here in the interwebs, in these internet streets. But if y'all see stuff that you are interested in having a conversation about, you know, whatever, just let me know. And I just basically save stuff as I see it. And I'm like, let me, you know, talk to my, let me holler at my folks about this. But yeah. So that is it for now. Thanks for listening to me ramble. Thanks for listening to me going through the voice struggle. Thanks for supporting my Patreon for those who are. And until next time, y'all, I am out. Black Radical Queer is a Main Hustle Media podcast hosted by Javia Nicole. BRQ is produced and edited by Charmaine Fury, and the show's theme music was created by The Brothers Records. You can connect with us on Twitter or Instagram at Black Rad Queer. That's BLKRADQWR. You can also connect with us on Facebook through the Black Radical Queer Podcast Facebook fan page or the BRQ discussion group. You can get Black Rat Queer merch on teespring.com/BlackRatQueer, BLKRADQWR. And you can leave a voicemail, call in, ask a question, those types of things on the BRQ Google Voice line. And that number is 937-601-8647.
Main Hustle Media. Turn your side hustle into your main hustle.